welcome to a Juno afternoon on Monday, April 18th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get the details about this weekend's productions by Theater at Latitude 58. We'll get a preview of Pete Griffin's Diary of a Forest Ranger. We'll talk with Chef Steph about the Juno Youth Triathlon Club's upcoming Color Run. And as part of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we'll hear about a self-defense for women class happening this Saturday. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 46 at the Juno Airport, 48 in Gustavus, and 49 in Hoonah.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A recent landmark decision by Canada's Supreme Court impacts more than half of the country's Indigenous population. The High Court recognized the country's 665,000 Métis and non-status Aboriginal people as Indians under the Constitution. Dan Karpinchuk has more on what that means.
It's a fantastic day. It's a great victory for all Aboriginal peoples. So basically they're saying that Indians in 1867 means Aboriginal peoples.
Clement Chartier, the president of the Métis National Council, was among those Métis and non-status Indians from across the country to celebrate the ruling. It said Ottawa must extend the rights accorded status Indians to Métis and off-reserve Aboriginal people. The decision ends what the court described as a jurisdictional wasteland that saw both the federal and provincial governments denying responsibility to nearly half the country's Indigenous population. The legal battle began in 1999 when several individuals in the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples alleged discrimination because they were not considered Indians under the Constitution. Métis leaders say the stage is set for a different relationship with the government.
I will be talking to my leadership and seeing if we, in the next several years, if not months, declare a third provisional government on the road to a full self-governing body nation within Canada, within the Constitution, and we look forward to a good new relationship with Canada.
The ruling also raises several questions, including who qualifies as a Métis or non-status Indian. And experts say there might not be any easy answers. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Kokopah tribe in southwestern Arizona has become the first tribe in the U.S. authorized by the Federal Emergency Management Agency to create emergency alerts and warnings during times of crisis. Stephanie Sanchez from KAWC in Yuma, Arizona, reports.
The Kokopah Indian tribe is now a coordinated operating group that can create emergency alerts and warnings through the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, or IPAWS. The system, designed by FEMA, aims to improve national alerting capabilities to help reduce the impact of disasters on people and property. Tribal members selected to use IPAWS will go through training to access the IPAWS site. Emergency manager and public health officer for the Kokopah Indian tribe, Michael Fila, says he and the tribal police chief are both certified for IPAWS. Four other tribal members are currently working to become certified.
It means a lot of responsibility, as we're going to be the first ones writing the policy and procedures on how to implement IPAWS. It means that we're setting a new path for tribal nations across the country.
Trained members of the Kokopah Indian Tribe Coordinated Operating Group will be able to create and disseminate a local emergency alert through the Emergency Alert System, the National Weather Service Alert System, and others. The message will be transmitted to television, radio, cell phones, internet, and email. For National Native News, I'm Stephanie Sanchez in Yuma.
Indigenous people from the U.S. and Canada held a water ceremony Saturday in Flint, Michigan. Tribe students, water advocates, and people of various faiths organized the ceremony and unity gathering to raise awareness about the importance of water and to shine a light on efforts to care for water. Mother Earth Water Walkers were among those who took part in the event. People in the local community have been dealing with the drinking water crisis. A tuition waiver program at United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck, North Dakota, will help lift some of the financial burden from students, according to school officials. The one-year pilot program starts in the fall and was recently approved by the college governing board. Tribal college officials say students come from some of the most impoverished areas in the country, and student loan programs often don't work for them. Officials say the waiver is part of efforts to make higher education attainable for Native Americans. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Hawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. The Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the Gathering of Nations to the Wise Pies Arena, a.k.a. The Pit, April 29th and 30th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 18th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by the Theater at Latitude 58 crew, Shelby, Ashley Carley, and Karen Allen. Welcome to the show, you four.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we are here to talk about the opening of Marvin's Room this Wednesday and The Scarlet Letter. They're both running through this weekend. This must have been an exciting process getting ready for these two shows, and busy. Karen, you said you're very busy right now.
Oh, we are. I mean, we've been rehearsing two shows in repertory since January.
Wow. Wow. And give me the details really quick about these nights and when they open and times and location as well.
All right. We are playing at McPheeters Hall, downtown, attached to Holy Trinity Church. And Marvin's Room opens Wednesday night, the 20th, at 7 p.m. And that show is a special fundraiser show for Hospice and Home Care of Juno. So the tickets to that one cost slightly more, but the dessert will be served. So there's perks there. And it goes to benefit a very good cause. And then Marvin's Room runs Friday night at 7 p.m., again at McPheeters, and Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m., and The Scarlet Letter opens Thursday night at 7, and then it plays Saturday night at 7 and Sunday at 2.
And I bet all of this is on your website and Facebook.
It is on our website, and it's on our Facebook page.
Okay. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Shelby, let's start with you. You're in Marvin's Room. Tell us a little bit about the story. What's it about?
Marvin's Room is a really beautiful story. It's about two sisters, Bessie and Lee, who basically remained apart for almost 20 years because they just have really different personalities and different life paths. And Bessie decides to remain in Florida to take care of their father, Marvin, who's really ill. He's been dying for almost 20 years. And their aunt, Ruth, which is the character I play. She has a problem with her back. And Lee, the other sister, decides she wants to move to Ohio to marry and start a family. And so they kind of remain apart for a really long time. And Bessie's doctor tells Bessie that she has leukemia and needs a bone marrow transplant. And so Lee decides to come down to Florida with her two sons, Hank and Charlie. And Hank is kind of a troubled teen boy. He recently got put in a mental institution because he set their house on fire. Anyways, the story is really beautiful. It's basically about the two sisters just finding love with each other. They're learning to love each other, and it's a really beautiful story.
Wow, sounds like it. And I can see the connection there with hospice and home care.
Mm-hmm.
For that.
And it's a comedy, believe it or not. It's a comedy that'll make you cry, but it's a play about the end of life, and it's hilarious.
Wow. Wow. Looking forward to that. Ashley, Carley, who wants to explain The Scarlet Letter?
So The Scarlet Letter, it's a pretty iconic thing. I think most people, even if they don't know the storyline, they have heard of Hester Prynne and her Scarlet Letter. But basically, it takes place in Puritan New England in Boston. And it's the story of Hester Prynne, who has an illegitimate child named Pearl.
Hi.
That's Carly. It's just like the story of her and her husband finding out about all this and trying to figure out who the father of her child is and all the things that happen there in Boston. So.
It sounds like you know the story very well. What are some different research techniques you all have done, or some role-playing or practice you've done to get ready for these roles?
Well, I did some research. I actually read the book back when I was a sixth grader and then really liked it. And then a year ago, Karen showed me this script, and I fell in love with it. and was so excited. And then we actually got to do it, which was the best. And I started researching into some Puritan cultures and, like, the lifestyle that these characters would have been leading. And then I actually made my own Scarlet Letter to get into.
And it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Carly, remind us how old you are.
I'm 15.
All right. And Ashley, how old are you?
I'm 19.
Okay. And Shelby?
I'm 13.
Wow. Carly, how about you? Some prep for this show.
I hadn't heard of the Scarlet Letter much before, but after I got casted as Pearl, I watched the movie, and it's nowhere near as good as the play, I can tell you that, but still pretty good. So, yeah.
This is an unusual script for the Scarlet Letter because it's very modern in its idiom, although it follows the story very closely. It's also kind of unusual because Hester's child, Pearl, is portrayed in the play as an infant and as a seven-year-old girl, and it's played by a nearly adult woman. And at no point do you really ever see her as a baby. Pearl steps in and out of the narrative to narrate the story and explain things to the audience and then to interact with the characters.
Okay. Shelby, when did you start acting, and it looks like you enjoy it? Why do you continue to do so? What's it do for you?
I just really love the people, and it's a place where I can be myself and have fun at the same time, and it's just really fun to perform. I love performing.
How about you, Ashley?
I started doing theater back in the sixth grade, so a while ago, and I kept doing it because I had a lot of friends there, and I genuinely enjoyed going, and then I really love the thing about theater, that is, like, you create something, and then you let people come and see it and just, like, escape from their lives for a little bit and get lost in, like, this new world. I think that's so cool.
Carly?
I started acting when I was 9 with Northern Lights, but then transferred to Latitude 58, and I just love everyone because they're all just so great. They've become my own little family that can get away from my actual family, but they're better than life, honestly.
Karen, this must be a lot of work, but I bet it's very fulfilling.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. We get to do outlandish scripts that people don't generally touch. I don't know that anyone's produced this show, or at least The Scarlet Letter, in a long time. Marvin's Room's a lot more famous. And we get to work with actors of all ages. My youngest performer is 12, and my oldest is somewhere next to 50, but when they get past 40, I don't make them disclose the exact dates. So people of all ages get to work together and grow together and perform together.
Is that how you would characterize theater at Latitude 58?
We are family theater, and sometimes we create our own family. We have siblings who perform together. We have parents and children who've performed together. We've had shows where we've had 3 generations of the same family perform together.
All right. Sounds like a lot of fun. Will you give us the details again of the production times?
Sure will. Marvin's Room opens Wednesday with the fundraiser at 7 p.m., and then it plays Friday at 7 and Saturday at 2. Scarlet Letter plays Thursday at 7, Saturday at 2. Oh, I'm sorry. Thursday at 7, Saturday at 7, and Sunday at 2. I have this memorized. I promise I do.
And what's your website again?
Theater@latitude58.com. And then we're on Facebook as Theater at Latitude 58.
All right. Any last thoughts from the actors before we go? Anything else you want to add?
Please come see our shows. We work really hard on them. Please.
And they do a wonderful job. I'm so insanely proud of them.
Great. Well, thanks. It was nice talking to all of you. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Tonight my heart is beating low and my head is bad. You've been seen with my best friend on the other side of town. I don't mind this waiting, don't mind this running around. But if you're gonna cheat on me, don't cheat in our hometown. How can I stand up to my friends and look them in the eye? Admit to questions that I know would be such lies. You spend all your pastime making me a clown. But if you're gonna cheat on me, don't cheat in our hometown. Now there are no secrets in this little country town. Everyone knows everyone, 4 miles and miles. Bright eyes and your sweet smile are driving me insane. You think it's smart to break my heart and run down my name. How can I stand up to my friend and look him in the eye? Admit the question that I know would be nothing but lies. Time making me a clown. But if you're gonna cheat on me, don't cheat in our hometown.
This is Bird Note. When it comes to goofy bird names, there's something irresistible about Yellow-Bellied Sapsucker. But, funny name and all, the Yellow-Bellied Sapsucker is a real bird, and its story tells us something fascinating about the timing of migration. Sapsuckers are a specialized group of woodpeckers that notch rows of small holes in trees, causing sap to well out. The birds eat the sugary liquid flowing from these sap wells. Yellow-bellied sapsuckers, which winter in the southeastern U.S. and Central America, migrate north in early spring at the time when, as the saying goes, the sap is running. Now, tree sap is similar in sugar content to the nectar hummingbirds take from flowers. And it's no coincidence that just as the sapsuckers get their sap wells flowing in spring, ruby-throated hummingbirds come migrating north. The hummingbirds rely on the bounty of sap released by sapsuckers. The hummers are so attuned to the sapsuckers that they will nest close by active sap wells and even follow their benefactors as they fly from one sap tree to another. A remarkable connection between two very different birds, with a migratory pattern all set in motion by warming days, which get the sap running. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from TK Maguire's, located in the Prospector Hotel and open 7 days a week, serving lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Catering is available for events both on and off-site. More information at prospectorhotel.com.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 18th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 18 minutes after the hour. Joining me now in the studio is storyteller Pete Griffin. He's going to be talking about his Friday night presentation of Diary of a Forest Ranger. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Hey, thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
Yeah. You started forest ranging, if you will, rangering in 1974, is that right?
In 1974, I was hired as a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Forest Service back in Michigan.
Okay. And it was your dream job, you say?
It was. It was my dream job, was to have a job out in the woods where I could be by myself and never have to talk to another person.
Excellent. Okay, so you started rangering. Wait, am I saying, how would you say that?
That's close enough.
Okay.
That's close enough.
I kind of like that, rangering. 74. When did you start storytelling and writing?
Really, when I started Tongass Trails back in 1999 or 2000, that's when I really kind of got the bug to start telling stories, natural history stories about being out in the woods and the things that I had learned. In contrasting the things that I know today with the things that I learned when I was growing up 30 or 40 years ago.
And for you, what comes first, sort of oral tradition in your head, or do you put it down on paper?
I started writing first.
Okay.
And then I was reading my scripts on the air, and I realized that the way I wrote was not the way I spoke, so I had to adjust my writing style. So that changed entirely, and it also kind of changed my on-air persona as well.
Okay. So this Friday night, as you present Diary of a Forest Ranger, tell us what can we expect?
It's going to follow my career a bit, and I'll take folks back to when I was 4 years old and running around in the woods on my own in Upper Michigan, and some of the things that I ran across there, birds that whose songs that I heard, but I couldn't see them. I wanted to know what they were, and then bats. Yeah, gosh, bats, they fly, but they're not birds, and only see them at night, so where do they go during the day? So a lot of questions like that, and just being out in the woods on my own, and that kind of led into the, well, here's the kind of career I need, out in the woods by myself, never having to talk to another person. And I'll follow that through the 70s and into the 80s and how my dream job changed, and eventually wanting to become the guy in charge, because the guy in charge he made decisions about personnel and budget, actually affected wildlife and fish habitat far more than I ever would as a field biologist.
Okay. Would you consider sharing a highlight or a snippet from a story that you're thinking about sharing on Friday?
Oh, sure. This is one that I told at the National Alliance on Mental Illness on April 1st, and it's a story about Romeo, the black wolf. And, you know, a lot of folks loved Romeo, and some folks hated him. And I was a minor government bureaucrat, kind of stuck in the middle. Folks on both sides of the issue kind of hounded me. You've got to do something. You've got to do something. And so, I needed help. So I looked in the Forest Service manual. I checked the Forest Service handbooks. I even looked at the Tongass Land Management Plan, but there was no entry for wolf, black, friendly.
Person-like
wolf.
They didn't have the person-like wolf. Person-friendly wolf.
That's right. But as a minor government bureaucrat, I also learned that there are two things you can do when faced with a dilemma. One is call a meeting, and the other is issue a press release, and both give the idea that you're actually making progress on solving a problem. So that's one of the stories that I'll tell. Some of them are humorous. Some are a little more poignant, and there are a couple of tragic stories in there, too.
Okay. And you're going to be recording this with the television cameras and such down there to produce a DVD?
Absolutely. Either a DVD or a CD, and it will be rebroadcast on 360 North as well, assuming that I don't melt down in a puddle in the middle of the performance.
Have you had a chance to perform down there yet?
I've been rehearsing.
Okay.
Down there in that space. Roblin Davis is, I'm using him as a director. He's done work. Great work.
Yeah, Roblin is excellent. And I don't know about you, but I really enjoy that space for performance, the acoustics, and as you mentioned, it's great to have people there when you're performing, right?
Oh, absolutely. The quality of my recordings, me sitting in a recording studio with a microphone, is vastly inferior to those recordings I make when I'm live telling a story to an audience.
Absolutely. And what's the cost for this on Friday?
This is going to be free to the public.
Okay, and what time does it begin?
It starts at 6 o'clock. Doors open at 5:30. April 22nd, Friday, that's Earth Day.
Right, as in like 4 days from now, right?
That's
this
right.
Friday.
Yep.
Doors open at 6:30, you say, or 5:30?
Doors open at 5:30.
Okay.
Performance at 6.
At 360 down here in the K2 building. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, Pete. Is there anything else you want to share about that?
This is something I've been working on for a year. I obtained a grant from the Rasmussen Foundation, an individual artist grant last year, to allow me to work with a solo performance coach and develop this script. So there's more of a professional air about it than my collected stories in the past.
Okay, sounds very exciting. Pete Griffin, this Friday night at 360, a free performance of Diary of a Forest Ranger. Doors open at 5:30. Cameras roll at 6 p.m. Anything else, Pete?
Man, I hope to see a lot of folks there. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 18th of April, 2016. It's the birthday of Clarence Darrow, born in Kinsman, Ohio, 1857, became a lawyer who fought for unions and the poor and became famous for defending some unpopular people in his day. The Scopes trial in 1925, he defended the schoolteacher John Scopes for teaching evolution in a school in Tennessee, and he successfully defended two confessed teenage murderers, Richard Loeb and Nathan Leopold. He defended them from receiving the death penalty. Clarence Darrow, who said, "I never killed a man, but I have read many obituaries with a lot of pleasure." It's the anniversary of the San Francisco earthquake 110 years ago today, 1906, 5:12 in the morning, and then 4 minutes later was the big quake itself, which broke the gas lines, which caused the fires, and the water mains ruptured, so there was no water to fight them. 3,000 people died. More than half of the residents of the city, 400,000 people lived in San Francisco in 1906, were homeless. Jack London was there in San Francisco when the quake struck. He wrote, "All the cunning adjustments of a 20th century city had been smashed by the earthquake. The streets were piled with the debris of fallen walls. The steel rails were twisted. All the shrewd contrivances and safeguards of man had been thrown out of gear by 30 seconds twitching of the earth." 1924, on this day, the first crossword puzzle book came out. Simon & Schuster published it, and it sold out immediately. By the end of that year, 1924, the three books Simon & Schuster put out were ranked number 1, 2, and 3 on the national bestseller list. It's the birthday of the journalist Susan Faludi, 1959, in Queens, in New York City, author of Backlash, The War Against Women, came out in 1992, and then Stiffed, The Betrayal of the American Man, came out in 1999, about the culture of masculinity in America. Susan Faludi, who said, "I don't see how you can be a feminist and not think about men. In order for women to live freely, men have to live freely, too." And it's the birthday of Clifton Keith Hillegass, Rising City, Nebraska, 1918, who gave us Cliff's Notes, the little black and yellow striped pamphlets that for some college students took the place of reading the classics themselves. Here's a poem for today by Robert Louis Stevenson. "I will make you brooches and toys for your delight of birdsong at morning and starshine at night. I will make a palace fit for you and me of green days in forests and blue days at sea. I will make my kitchen, and you shall keep your room where white flows the river and bright blows the broom. And you shall wash your linen and keep your body white in rainfall at morning and dewfall at night. And this shall be for music when no one else is near, the fine song for singing, the rare song to hear, that only I remember, that only you admire, of the broad road that stretches and the roadside fire." I Will Make You Brooches, poem by Robert Louis Stevenson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with print solutions for small businesses, including copies, presentations, booklets, and custom-framed prints and posters. In-store and online, Staples make more happen. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles with Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 18th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, 30 minutes after the hour, and joining me in the studio now is Chef Steph. And we're not talking about food today. We are talking about the Reigning Colors 5K.
Yes, thank you for having me.
It's so nice to have you.
Well, thank you. And it's pledge day. I'm excited. This morning I woke up, I was going to pledge, and I was like, oh, no, I'm going to be here in person. So I've never pledged in person, so I'm excited to do so.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for doing that.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
You know that we can't do this without you.
I know, and I don't want you to go anywhere.
And did you know that with every membership contribution, you get a copy of Mark Kelly and Nick Chan's Alaska Photographic Excursions book. It's absolutely stunning, so make sure you take one with you.
I will. Thank you. And you know what? I'm going to shout out to a thank you to Mark Kelly. This is what I love about Juno. I mean, there's Juno Afternoon here. I'm here to promote a 5K run, a fundraiser, and this community, everybody's always giving to the – Juno is great. Always just people, your neighbors helping all of us to make the station keep going, or kids go to Sitka for a triathlon, or any of the numerous things. This town is a great place.
Agreed. If you want to become a member, if you want to be like Chef Steph, go to ktoo.org or call 586-3636 right now. Reigning Colors 5K this Sunday, April 24th at Riverbend. Tell me about the Juno Youth Triathlon Club.
The Juno Youth Triathlon Club is a new club. They used to be the Harborview Triathlon Club. So the gym coach, Zach Simpson, started this a bunch of years ago. And the first kids are now, they're all in middle school, and they want to continue doing this triathlon. It's so much fun. And but they're not under the umbrella of Harborview anymore. So the parents who were running it when our kids, myself included, when our kids were in Harborview, we're now forming this other club, and this way we can incorporate more than just Harborview School. In the beginning, it had to be small just because it was one coach, but we're hoping that it grows and takes on a life of its own. And the kids go over to Sitka and run the Julie Hughes Triathlon over there, and they're always blown away by the amount of Juno kids. I mean, well, it's all kids. Well, our group is kids. But it's great, and they train so hard. In fact, I have no kids with me today because they're all in track and field at DZ. And then when that's over, they're going to take the bus down to Harborview, and then where they're going to run and bike some more. And then they swim on Fridays, and the amount of time that these kids put into it, it's so impressive, and it's so wonderful to see, and they love it.
Yeah, kudos to Zach and all you parents for making running fun. Like, I've never heard of this, like kids getting out of elementary school, and they still need to keep running more.
Right? as soon as I don't have to run, I don't run anymore. but the kids, Zach motivates all ages to go. And I remember, so my son is now 12. He's in the sixth grade. But I remember it being all excited that he can do the triathlon. It's like, oh, I've been doing marathon, but now I could do triathlon. And it's great and crazy.
Yeah. So let's see. It says run or walk.
Yes,
bring the whole family.
Yes, it is fun for everybody. The kids, the triathlon kids, will be throwing color, and they got a lot of color. In the years past, the kids know how to throw better. They're throwing lower, not in anybody's face, because the last thing you want to do when you're running is get like a face full of color, unless you're young and want to be covered. But they're learning how to throw the color better in less annoying places, and it's so much fun. It's really, at the end, there's everybody gets color, and at the end there's a giant color throw. Everybody throws it up in the air. I know that there's videos on it, about it, on YouTube and Facebook, and I have a poster which nobody could see, but I've been putting them up around town, so you'll be able to see it, and it is an action shot, and it's fun. And don't worry about your cars going home. They have a big leaf blower that blows off any of the extra color. We looked at Sam one year, and we're like, you're not getting in the car. And it washes off, and it's great. There is a pre-registration to ensure a shirt, but this year It has been a very successful run or event, and the shirts in past have sold out. Every year we buy more and more shirts, and hopefully we bought a lot more shirts. So day of, you could get a shirt. It's not a guarantee. If you early registration pretty much guarantees you, hopefully, a shirt. We're working our best. We really are parent volunteers putting this together so the kids can go to Sitka. We take the ferries over, and we were actually worried with the ferry schedule this year with the cuts, but nope, they have it for the triathlon, so we're able to go, which is great. And the glacial ice, the shaved ice guy is going to be there, and that's not part of your registration. That's extra. So bring some money to get some shaved ice, and he will be donating 50% of his sales to the triathlon club, and that is wonderful. So thank you to Glacial Ice. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And come down, and if anybody was listening to KINY when the kids were on, they were talking about a bouncy house, but I just want to say that didn't work out, or they had to do away with that. So no bouncy house, but shaved ice.
Where can one pre-register?
You can pre-register at Pavitt Health and Fitness, the Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, Foggy Mountain, Harborview, JRC Downtown, or online at active.com. If you you have to register by Friday, 5 p.m., April 22nd. It's $30 for adults, $20 for youth 18 and under. The day of the event, it's $10 more for each.
And this is at Riverbend Elementary?
Yes.
By the high school?
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, in Mendenhall Mall.
It's the covered area near the Brotherhood Bridge Trail, yes. And registration begins at 11, and the race begins at noon.
And all proceeds go to help this Juno Youth Triathlon Club go to Sitka to run in another race.
Yes, yes. It's all about gearing them, getting them ready to, or the means to bring them to Sitka to run this race.
Okay. If somebody wants more information, should they go to active.com there?
That's a good way to register. I know there are lots of links on Facebook. Just go to Juno Youth Triathlon Club. And I know all the families are posting. And I think that is it.
Okay. Chef Steph, thank you for coming on. It's the Raining Colors 5K this Sunday at Riverbend Elementary. Registration at 11. Race begins at noon, but you should go to active.com to pre-register by 5 p.m. on Friday. And Chef Steph, who also renewed her membership here at K2, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you. And please, everybody, register and can donate to K2. Thank you, Scott.
blue jar. I put the pedal down to make some time. There's something good waiting down this road. I'm picking up whatever is mine. I'm running.
This station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice-rink or call 586-0410.
Alaska's largest improv theater event, the Alaska State Improv Festival, returns to McPheeters Hall April 28 to May 1, featuring shows from Austin's Hideout Theater, Westside Comedy in Santa Monica, Chicago's world-famous I.O., and more. Tickets available at all outlets. Shows begin at 6:30. See ASIFest.com for more details. The Alaska State Improv Festival, April 28 to May 1, McPheeters Hall, ASIFest.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 18th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 16 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined now by Kristen Mayberry. She is the owner and operator of the Mountain Wellness Center, Mountainside Wellness Center, excuse me. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thanks, Scott.
And also Swarupa Toth, among other roles. She's the sexual assault response team leader at AWARE. Did I get that right, Swarupa?
Right.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, you two. I guess today we're probably going to focus on it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month and a self-defense for women class that's happening this Saturday, right?
That's right. It's going to be for women, young women who are 14 years or older, and it will be all day from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., which is about how much time. You can't get it any shorter than that to really learn in a very disciplined, professional, and a safe way how to defend yourself, how to use the momentum of somebody larger than you, somebody's aggression to your advantage.
Okay. And this is going to take place from 10 to 4, like you say, at the Mountainside Wellness Center. Kristen, will you tell us where that is and what kind of business is it?
Yeah, so we're delighted to host the workshop this Saturday. The Mountainside Wellness Studio is located in the Arcticor building downtown. So that's between 4th and 5th and Gold and Harris. We're the same building where the charter school is in the bottom floor. So we're delighted to be in downtown and delighted to host this. So we offer lots of different wellness and health programs, fitness classes, yoga, boot camp, all kinds of things centered around just creating not only wellness for in a personal sense, but wellness in the community as well. So that's why we believe this is such a great place to host this fantastic workshop.
Okay. And you were telling me, Swarupa, that the leader of this workshop is a black belt in karate.
Yes. Diana Stevens is one of AWARE's Women of Distinction, and she's also a black belt in karate. She owns and runs and instructs classes at Juno Shotokan. And the beautiful thing is that she'll bring four of her assistants who are also some level of belt in karate, and you get to enjoy the beauty and the discipline of their background, the philosophy as well as the physical discipline that they sort of share with all of us. So you come away empowered with a few different things.
And you've taken this class, right?
I have. It's what? Wild and fun. It's definitely empowering. It's challenging, but it is fun. You really, you know, Diana has a way of getting you like psyched up for it and really engaged. And she's, like I said, so professional about it. And then AWARE brings in a little bit of an element of talking about what is consent. Consent today is not necessarily consent tomorrow. You know, just some basic ideas that surprisingly we forget, or if you're a teenager, you may never have heard, as well as some information about bystander intervention and how to recognize a situation and how to best and most safely respond to help another person. So it's very practical, it's very physical, and it's a lot of fun, and you come out of it really bonded with the group that you went in with.
About how many individuals will be able to take the class?
I think the last time we had about 15 or 16 people. So we have some spots left, so that would be fine. But, yeah, we have four instructors besides Diana, so everybody gets personal, attention, and make sure that everything is being done accurately and professionally and with discipline. And you usually work with a partner, so we're in teams like that in this beautiful space that Kristen has created.
Tell us a little bit about AWARE. This is one of the many services that AWARE provides. Tell us about AWARE and what's on your radar during Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
AWARE's main mission is the safety and the prevention or the response to interpersonal violence against children and women and men, lesbian, gay, transgendered, the community. We respond in the moment, and that's what my team does. I'm the manager of the sexual assault response team, so I've been trained and I train others, not only in Juneau but in our rural communities, how to help somebody who's just experienced interpersonal violence, whether it's sexual assault or domestic violence or both. AWARE has a whole arm, a whole branch of prevention that you may have heard of. My favorite is Girls on the Run, because I was a coach many times, and this is another way to really get physical and get involved with really positive messages for third to fifth grade girls. So we have prevention, we have intervention, and we have a choice and accountability program for men. So we try to be really holistic in the way that we're working with other agencies in this community about interpersonal violence.
Okay. Kristen Swarupa mentioned that Mountainside Wellness Studio is a beautiful place. Describe the atmosphere for us.
So we've worked really hard at creating an environment where everyone is welcome. And my rule is when you leave, you got to feel better than when you walked in. So we try to be very welcoming and inviting all ages, sizes, shapes, and it just doesn't matter. One of the most beautiful things I think that happened last year is we had several mother-daughter teams take this workshop together. And so now those families have a common vocabulary to talk about these really difficult issues. And to see that kind of empowerment and grace was just a really nice thing to witness.
Yeah, because it sounds like this is a lot more than just physical moves. You're talking about empowerment, you're talking about issues.
Yes, how you hold yourself, how you walk through the world, how you present yourself to other people. I was talking to a woman who's an MMA fighter today, and I said to her, wow, what is the benefit for you? And she said, it's about confidence. It's about knowing and projecting to other people that you are not a vulnerable person here, that you stand in the world with confidence. And this is not fake. You know, you also have the training. So I think that's really the key element that you come with, that you walk away with. And once you come ready to play, come with your own lunch, come with comfortable clothing, and you will walk out a changed person with a lot of confidence and some good friends.
Okay. If somebody wants to sign up or get more information, how should they do that?
They can call AWARE at 586-6623 and ask for me, Swarupa, or just ask about the self-defense class. There's a registration also, a form also at the studio and online, awareak.org. And we've been posting it on Facebook as well, so if somebody likes us there, they can find the registration form. We'd like to have people register by Friday so that we have a sense of, you know, whether we're completely filled and need to ask people not to sign up anymore. Right now, we do have some spaces open, so we're welcoming more registration.
14 or older, is that right?
That's right.
Before we go, Swarupa, it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. What, as a community, what are some other things that we should be thinking about?
I think the most important thing that we can realize, especially if we think that we do not have any way to relate to this topic, is that people that we know, people that we care about, have experienced sexual assault. And if you just know that, you could be a little more open to being able to help somebody or to prevent it from being happening around you or even to your own self.
Okay. That's the voice of Swarupa Tath. She is the Sexual Assault Response Team Leader at AWARE, and also Kristen Mayberry of the Mountainside Wellness Studio in the studio today. Are we missing anything either of you'd like to add?
Just come and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's a great opportunity to get empowered. We look forward to seeing you.
10 to 4 this Saturday. Give us the number once more, please, Swarupa.
586-6623.
All right. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Foundation for End-of-Life Care for Return from Grief. This event is intended to give participants an opportunity to think about grief and to receive advice from four Juno experts. This moderated discussion will create a better understanding of how to approach a friend in grief, a better idea of what is helpful for someone in grief, and how to manage your own grief. This event is open to the public and takes place April 28th, 5:30 p.m. in the Hickel Room at Centennial Hall. Information at foundationforendoflifecare.org.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juneau.org/parkrec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
Well, thank you for tuning into a Juno afternoon today here on Monday, April 18th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. Tomorrow, Ben Brown will host, and he'll give us the details about the upcoming early learning fair. Rosemary Walling will be here with news about Planet Nine from outer space. We'll talk with Pillars of America speaker Melvin Adams, and we'll find out about the school district's Tlingit language and literature program. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more live at 3 on K2 News and online via KTOO.org. Looking at the weather here tomorrow, Tuesday, decreasing clouds with highs around 51 and light winds. On Wednesday, the forecast calls for mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny. What do you think, guys? I have this great crew here in the studio with me, Ed Schoenfeld, Tim Olson, John Greeley. We're all here as part of the spring 2016 membership drive. They just called for the sun word.
Hey, I think it was out a few minutes ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's rainbows out there.
Wow.
Leading to the pot of gold at KTOO, I assume.
We could actually, do it looked that way.
It looked that way, Ed says. Well, we're really excited to be getting into our afternoon news here and all the things we just learned about going on your show that you just had, which was great.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for being here. It's a cool thing to be a part of this public media team, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
John Greeley, long time supporter of public media and news director, among other things.
Back in my younger days, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's good to be here. I always enjoy the membership drive because it's a chance for the community to come together and help support a much-needed institution like KTOO.
586-3636 or go to ktoo.org. I see Ed Schoenfeld is going to be on your team. This is going to be a fun, all things considered.
Well, we got the news gang here getting ready to pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the world. Every day we hear All Things Considered here on KTOO. It's one of these important news programs that we bring to the members, the people who support the service. And this is that week where we kind of chime in every once in a while and remind you that we ask you to help support that.
Absolutely. Maybe a shout-out right now if you've ever been a guest on a Juno afternoon or if you've benefited from hearing something on a Juno afternoon. If you're not yet a member, it takes just a minute or two. Go to ktoo.org or you can call 586-3636. It's so easy to do. And then you are supporting Juno afternoon and the bringing All Things Considered to us. So I look forward to hearing from you guys. We have just a few moments more, and we'll go to a quick break, and then looking forward to hearing you. Thanks, guys.